Ukraine insists on maintaining its territorial integrity ahead of a fresh round of peace talks with Russia. Another incident of a Chinese vessel harassing a Philippine ship reported in disputed waters. Later on in the program, we honor another remarkable woman, meteorologist and climatologist Lourdes Tibic. And high drama at the Oscars as eventual Best Actor winner Will Smith attacks comedian Chris Rock over a joke about his wife. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Topping the news at this hour, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky backtracks on his statement to Russian journalists he is ready to discuss adopting a neutral status. In a video addressed to Ukrainians, Zelensky insisted on the territorial integrity of his country after earlier suggesting he was ready for a compromise in order to achieve peace. Peace talks are set to resume in Istanbul. Zelensky earlier told Russian journalists he has ruled out trying to recapture all Russian-held territories by force, saying it would lead to a third world war. Russia's media watchdog forbids news outlets from rebroadcasting or distributing Zelensky's interview with Russian journalists. The group of journalists that interviewed Zelensky included some of Russia's most prominent members of the press, including the editor-in-chief of the recently shuttered channel TV Rain. Moscow's watchdog says some of those media outlets have been formally branded as foreign agents by the Russian government. It has also launched an investigation into the news outlets. Responding to the inquiry, President Zelensky said Russia is frightened by the interview. The African Development Bank aims to raise $1 billion to stave off a potential food crisis brought about by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The funds will be put towards launching an emergency food production plan in Africa. This as the conflict between Russia and Ukraine sent fuel and commodity prices soaring. It also threatens the supply of global wheat and corn.
Already we have, coming out of COVID, usually 24 million people that are falling further into extreme poverty. And that's going to worsen the situation. Now, what's even making it worse now is what has happened to energy prices. If we do not take immediate action, we're going to actually have a situation that we may have a looming food crisis in Africa as a result of this war.
In other news, another incident of a Chinese vessel harassing a Philippine ship. The Philippine Coast Guard says a Chinese Coast Guard vessel was seen sailing close to one of its ships in the disputed Bajo de Masinloc or the Scarborough Shoal last March 2nd. The PCG asserts the move violated the 1972 International Regulation for Preventing Collisions at Sea as they constrained the maneuvering space of the Philippine vessel. This is the fourth incident of close-distance maneuvering involving a Chinese Coast Guard vessel in the area in less than a year. It's still unclear whether the Philippines has launched a diplomatic protest over this latest incident. It comes as American forces start arriving in the Philippines for the annual Philippine-U.S. Balikatan military exercises, which kicks off today.
These exercises showcase the teamwork and integration between the Navy, the Marine Corps, and our allies and partners in the Indo-Pacific in order to provide reassurance as well as to deter our adversaries. And should deterrence fail, we're here to fight and win.
U.S. presence is essential in order to counterbalance the growing military power of China. That is why American presence in the Philippines and in the region is really welcomed by a lot of states, with a caveat that American presence in the region will not lead to American predominance, military predominance.
Acción Democrático asks the Supreme Court for a certificate of finality over its ruling on the estate tax case of the Marcos family. This after the camp of presidential candidate Ferdinand Marcos Jr. claimed the decision on the case is not yet final and executory. Acción Democrática Chairman Ernest Ramel also slammed Marcos spokesman Attorney Vic Rodriguez, who said the issue is being used for political gains. Ramel warns the debt could be erased if Marcos wins the presidency. A high court ruling in 1997 affirmed a court of appeals decision on the Marcos estate tax of 23 billion pesos. The liability has since ballooned to 203 billion pesos. Election watchdog Contradaya calls on Marcos Jr.'s sister, Senator Aimee Marcos, to resign as the head of the Committee on Electoral Reforms. That's following her claim of a supposed data breach involving the Comelec's election system provider, Smartmatic.
Her role is very important because we don't want any legislative inquiry pertaining to the elections to be having some bad taste in the mouth, in the eyes of the people. We believe that her being a sister of the presidential frontrunner would pose a clear conflict of interest. There's nothing wrong with organizing an inquiry in aid of legislation that's part of check and balances, but someone else should take over.
Contradaya also urging vice presidential candidate and Senate President Vicente Soto III, who also claimed an alleged breach in Smartmatic's operations, to inhibit from any inquiry on the issue. Vice President Leni Robredo and her running mate, Senator Francis Pangilinan, take their campaign to Samar. Let's get an update now from our correspondent, Jervis Manahan. Jervis, over to you. All right, we seem to have lost Jervis there. We're going to try and get him back on the line as soon as we can. In the meantime, we move on with the rest of the news this noon. The Commission on Elections will start forming a task force that will address issues on vote buying this coming Wednesday. Comelec Commissioner George Garcia says the task force will be given motu proprio powers. That's in contrast to the poll body's earlier statement, formal complaints should be filed first before they can investigate reports of vote buying. The interagency team would include the Justice Department, Presidential Anti-Corruption Commission, National Bureau of Investigation, Philippine National Police, and the Armed Forces of the Philippines.
Seryoso po ang inyong Commission Election ay inyong pong pamahalaan na masawata, pigilan ang issue ng vote buying. Dahil pagka po may vote buying ay hindi po nagre-reflect yung tunay na sentimiento ng ating mga kababayan. Hindi po natin babaliwalain yung mga akusasyon, aligasyon patungkol sa vote buying. And at the same time, kahit po itong task force na ito ay bibigyan ng kapangyarihan na mag-motu proprio investigation. Mm-hmm. Ibig sabihin po, kahit wala kayong reklamo sila mismo na bilang na talaga para sa trabaho yan, ay magmumoto proprio sila mismo, hindi na maghihintay ng mga complaints mula sa ating mga kababayan.
Action Democratico Standard Bearer Isko Moreno endorses Senatorial Bet JV Ejercito. The Manila mayor raised Ejercito's hand Sunday night during the proclamation rally of Moreno's local party, Ascenso Manileño, in Sampaloc. Ejercito, who is seeking to return to the Senate as an independent candidate, had initially hoped to be included in the Unity Team ticket, but instead, they chose to adopt his brother, Jingoy Estrada, who's also running for senator. Though Ejercito admits he was surprised by their move, he says he remains friends with Marcos.
I was really also puzzled that I was not included, given the fact that I had good relationships with him. Plus, Karen, more than that, is that I think I have performance. No, I have decent performance in Senate, having passed two landmark legislations, the universal healthcare law, and the creation of the Department of Human Settlements, among others. To be fair to BBM, Senator Bongbong Marcos, when we bumped into each other in Pampanga, he even told me that I can join the rallies, no? Because we are really, you know, we have been friends for a long time.
And we have him back on the line. Our correspondent Jervis Manahan now joins us. He's been shadowing the campaign of Vice President Leni Robredo and her running mate, Senator Francis Pangilinan. And this time, their stop is in Samar. Jervis, over to you.
Yes, Carmina, the tandem of Vice President...
dropped again. We're going to try and reestablish our connection with our correspondent, Jervis Manahan. Jervis, are you still there?
Yes, Carmina. Robredo has just finished a jam-packed rally in Calbayog, where she was welcomed by former Secretary of Interior and Local Government Mel Senen Sarmiento. Robredo promised more projects in Samar and she said she will work to lower the electricity in the province. The tandem will hold another rally in Catbalogan this afternoon before the grand rally in Catarman in northern Samar this evening. Tomorrow, she will be visiting some towns in Leyte before the rally.
Okay, signal has been spotty there for our correspondent Jervis Manahan, but this is what we're going to do. We're going to try to talk to him offline, and we're going to get more details about the Samar sortie of Vice President Leni Robredo as she campaigns there together with her running mate, Senator Kiko Pangilinan. We're going to try and get Jervis back on the line, but if not, we're going to get the pertinent details and give them to you as soon as we can. In the meantime, President Rodrigo Duterte turned 77 today, and his birthday wish is for clean, fair, and honest elections this May. Acting Malacanang spokesperson Martin Andanar underscored the chief executive's desire for a peaceful transfer of power. According to Andanar, Duterte will hold a simple and quiet celebration in Davao City. Next on In Focus, we'll be joined by presidential aspirant Faisal Mangondato. Mr. Mangondato will join us tomorrow, March 29th. If you have any questions, do send them in to ANC Alerts on Twitter and ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Use the hashtag ANC In Focus. Going to take a break now. Up ahead, China's financial hub of Shanghai enters a lockdown due to an Omicron-fueled surge. We'll give you details of that story and more when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with us here on ANC. It was Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Ukraine insists on maintaining its territorial integrity ahead of a fresh round of peace talks with Russia. Another incident of a Chinese vessel harassing a Philippine ship reported in disputed waters. And high drama at the Oscars as eventual Best Actor winner Will Smith attacks comedian Chris Rock over his joke about his wife. Back with more news. Alert level 3 still up over Taal volcano. That's as the volcano continues to emit steam plumes and sulfur dioxide gas above normal levels. But the country's top volcanologist notes no earthquake activity was recorded over the past 24 hours. FIVOX director Renato Soledum also assures the public they don't expect a major eruption anytime soon.
Based on current parameters, we don't see the potential of a large explosive eruption similar to the January 2020 eruption as of now. What it will take for a strong explosion to happen is for deep magma around 5 to 7 kilometers. If these would rise to the surface fast enough that it will prevent sulfur dioxide gas to escape, then the explosive eruption can happen.
And our very own Dennis Datu now joins us with an update on Taal Volcano. Dennis, over to you. How are things there?
Marina, over 100 police personnel were deployed to Agoncillo and Laurel, Batangas to aid residents affected by the recent explosion of Taal Volcano. Calabarzon PNP Director Brigadier General Antonio Yara led the inspections at the evacuation centers to ensure the safety of the evacuees. General Yara also met with the police heads of the town surrounding Taal Volcano to prepare for the possible worst-case scenarios. According to the Batangas PDRRMO, over 1,500 families or close to 6,000 individuals have been evacuated since the volcanic explosion last Saturday. But authorities still urging many residents to vacate their houses, especially those who are residing within the 7-kilometer danger zone. Residents who have to stay in their houses argued that they cannot just leave their livestock and other animals because these are their main source of livelihood. Residents were allowed to feed their livestock and other animals within the designated window hours from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Meanwhile, the stock of food at the evacuation center is not a problem. However, evacuees are complaining about the absence of comfortable beds. Some children are also experiencing cough and cold. The evacuees are now appealing for adequate beds and bedding, especially now that they are expected to stay a week more in the evacuation centers. Coast Guard personnel are also doing their regular patrolling activities along the Taal Lake to ensure that the residents are complying with the prescribed window hours. Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Dennis. Take care. Keep safe. When the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change released its report, the revelations were just as staggering as they were sobering. It pointed to two things: that the world is in a climate emergency and that we are running out of time. And among the scientists sounding that alarm in that report is Lourdes Tibig, Filipino meteorologist and climatologist. Lourdes joins us now, one of the remarkable women we honor this month. Happy Women's Month to you, Lourdes. Welcome to the program, and thanks for joining us today.
Well, good afternoon, Carmina. It would be me thanking you in asking me to be in your program today.
Thank
you for the greetings.
Oh, no. This is a long time coming. You should have been honored yesterday. But first off, let's talk about your journey through science, your journey as you fell in love with science. Where did you first discover your love for science in general?
In general, I've always been in love with science, although I started with a university education that is very far away from science, the science itself, because I did a bachelor's degree in education. Mm-hmm. But my major subjects were physics and mathematics. Mm-hmm. So early on, I've always been in love with science.
And to what would you attribute this?
It's probably because of my father. My father was a school teacher. And even poor as we were when we were growing up, we were always reading books. We were always reading anything that is printed material. And we love reading ever since we were very, very young. So it's probably that.
And how did you find yourself zeroing in on meteorology and climatology? When did that happen? When was that seismic shift?
Okay, I started my career as a teacher, but sometime after almost 10 years of teaching, I found an opportunity to do a training on meteorology at the Philippine Atmospheric Geophysical and Atmospheric, Astronomical Services Administration. For the first time, that agency offered training in meteorology for those who were not employed at Pagasa yet. Mm-hmm. So I took that opportunity because I was very interested in weather, in weather and climate. So I undertook that one-year training without any pay, but that was a big sacrifice. And my career really rolled on that because Pagasa always offers opportunities for people to go to undergo masteral studies or even scholarship programs. Those that are sponsored by the World Meteorological Organization based in Switzerland, due to capacity building of meteorological agencies, the WMO offers these opportunities. And I tried to take advantage of all these opportunities. I tried to apply to any course regarding meteorology and climatology that would accept me.
Was being a woman never a hindrance for you? Because when you talk about the field, the scientific field, there is that gender gap that we have to speak of. How are you able to break through? And why must there be a greater representation of women in the field of science, Lourdes?
Okay, let's talk about gender gaps. that has always been the end thing now. Everybody says we women are not being given enough opportunities or even equal opportunities. I would, even at the IPCC, at the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, we just published a paper dealing with gender gap in the authorship of these global assessment reports. It's probably because there are very few women in meteorology. In the Philippines, it never was offered very lately. The BS meteorology has not been offered in the Philippines until just a few years ago. So even if women wanted to enter that field, it was really quite a difficult journey. And how I broke the barrier? Oh, I guess when I got accepted at the agency, and there were opportunities for scholarships, I tried to apply, and I didn't even feel that I was being, there was some kind of discrimination because I'm a woman. It's just probably because the capacity building program that was being sponsored by the WMO never looks at the gender. Whether women or men, for as long as you meet the requirements, the opportunity is given to you. But in terms of what I was saying a while ago about gender gap in the global assessment reports, it probably is because there were not very many being nominated by the government themselves. Because being a lead author, being invited as a lead author in the IPCC Global Assessment Reports is first through nominations by governments. So your own government nominates you to the IPCC, and then they choose, based on your requirement, whether the IPCC Bureau will choose whether you are qualified to be in the author. Then now is they're trying to lessen the gap between women and men lead authors.
Let's talk about that IPCC special report. You were one of the lead authors of that report on ocean and cryosphere in a changing climate. As you were coming across discovery after discovery and knowing how vulnerable our country is, what was going through your head?
What was going through my head? When we were just doing the scoping meeting, I tried my best. Because before you start a report, there's a scoping meeting on what is going to be included in that special report. So I tried my best to be accepted to be part of the scoping meeting because I knew tropical cyclones would be a very important aspect of that report. And the Philippines is having an average of 19.6 tropical cyclones entering the Philippine area of responsibility. And with climate change being increasing at a pace that we could not even imagine now, I thought it would be very important, it would be a great opportunity to be able to put the tropical cyclone occurrences rather as a phenomenon and as something that is going to impact developing countries, in particular the Philippines. I was really very anxious that I be there because I know something is going to happen with regards to the severity and frequency of tropical cyclones. Because year in, year out, you see so many typhoons affecting the country, and we hardly have time to even recover from the recent one, from the past one, and here comes another one again. And I thought it would be great if we could have more information so that it would help in the adaptation planning that our local government units would be putting in place.
Talk to us, Lourdes, and you kind of touched on this as you were answering that question. Talk to us about science and emotion, because some are of the opinion that these two should be separate and distinct. Is there space for the latter, especially when your findings point to one thing, that your country is going to have to deal with far worse effects of the worsening climate, Lourdes?
No, I don't think it's like that. Because all my career life at Pagay, I've always been so passionate about climate change. So it's both a fascination for science and it's both passion for helping do something that would help the country. In 1991-1992, I started being part of the what you call the Interagency Committee on Climate Change. We were that group that was mandated by the government to address issues regarding climate change. I've always been in that, and I've always been so passionate about it. So I don't think there is a dividing line between emotion and your love or your dedication to science. Mm. Although I would say passion is something that you needed if you really want to get the information across to the policymakers, across to the communities themselves. Mm.
And talking about communication, the clock is ticking. In the last COP, they said it's 1 minute to midnight. Is the climate action you're seeing enough? What do you want to see happening at this point as we speak?
Unfortunately, the action that is happening is not enough. The science says that all those nationally determined contributions, I mean, NDCs or nationally determined contributions, are the mitigation plans that are being submitted by countries. The science says that with all that, we will still overshoot the ultimate goal of 1.5 degrees centigrade increase during this century. The action that the globe is taking is not enough. We need to really do drastic action in order to cut our emissions, because the way it's looking, the adverse impacts are becoming increasingly severe, such that we would even think perhaps if the temperature increases accelerates as fast as it's happening now, we might probably not be able to live and adapt to the projected more severe impacts in the coming decades. Mm. The fear of most scientists, climate change scientists, is that we will be reaching 1.5 degrees centigrade temperature increase by the end of this decade unless we do something. The action that the globe is doing is not enough. The window of opportunity to be able to achieve that goal of limiting the temperature increase is fast narrowing. Mm. So we should be calling on our leaders, our political leaders, to address this issue, or else it becomes an issue of existence for nature and even for people.
So when we talk about the Philippine context, I mean, you said it yourself, globally, there's not enough that should be happening as we speak. But when you take it home, it's not happening. Why do you think this is so? You know how it's not seen as a gut issue, right? How must climate change and action be communicated so that it will be a gut issue? Because it is.
Yeah, it is. We should really be, that is the problem. We have enough science information. The problem is communicating the urgency of the action to our policymakers. The problem is communicating the urgency of actions to our people on the ground to be able to plan for adaptation and also for mitigation, because adaptation and mitigation should go hand in hand together. Not enough is being done in the Philippines, primarily because we don't have access to financial resources. That is why even our NDC that we submitted have all been rather conditional, meaning we will be doing all these mitigation activities that we are promising for as long as we are given assistance from the international community, because we just don't have the resources to do it.
Are things looking up, though? Because there is that foundation laid down by this administration on climate finance, for example. And there is that Mandanas-Garcia ruling, which, if used right, may pave the way for climate projects for the most vulnerable communities. What do you think about that?
Yes. Now I'm seeing that there could be financial assistance ready. But the thing is, our local government units, or even the national government units, they need more information. They need to be able to synthesize the information and appreciate what sort of information they should be putting into the development planning into the plans, programs, and policies of the government, whether national or local. Mm-hmm. Now, if we do have access to financial assistance, then we should be able to do what we are supposed to do. But we need to be able to really glean information, the proper information, from all those that are being offered us. The problem is translating the scientific information into layman's language, into a language that is going to be understandable by the local government leaders.
Mm. And tell us how. Tell us how. Is it communicating how crops might turn out to be as abundant as before? How do you explain sea level rising, communities getting submerged? Is that how you're supposed to communicate this?
That's exactly the problem, because in my case, I would have wanted to really be able to impart the knowledge, the information in a layman's language. But sometimes we are constrained because we kind of think in our heads that because we easily understand what we are saying, it doesn't come to us. We seldom realize that people we are talking to may not be able to really quite grasp the information that we wanted to put across them. Mm. Because especially like for example, coastal communities, how do we explain to them that they need to be able to appreciate the fact that there are going to be higher risks for them if they live along coast, in particular because we do have tropical cyclones occurring almost 20 in a year, because sea level rise is happening. And sea level rise should be able to, we should be able to rather explain sea level rise in terms of ways and words that would enable them to appreciate the risk they will be under unless they do something now before it's too late. Mm.
Of course, there it is.
We need assistance from communication experts.
All right. And you know, when I talk to you now and I talk to you after decades and decades of, you know, being out there following scientific leads and really, as you put it a while ago, marrying your fascination over science with your passion for serving the country. And I know that a lot of young girls are out there still figuring out what to do, but also wanting to become scientists. What do you tell these young girls?
I have always been trying to encourage our young people to go into the scientific field. The IPCC report, if I must say, is not just including physical scientists, climatologists, meteorologists in the assessment. They include all experts in all disciplines, in particular socio and economic disciplines. So for as long as it is a science field, I would encourage you to be in it. It does not have to be meteorology. It does not have to be climatology. You can go into economics, because we need economics in dealing with these problems with climate change. It's got to be a discipline that will deal with something that would help in crafting an effective plan to adapt and to mitigate climate change. It's not limited to meteorology alone. I'm encouraging you young girls to be able, and even young men, young boys, to go into any science field that would help us deal with these issues. It has become a multifaceted challenge. We don't just need weather specialists. We need more of the other disciplines, scientists from the other disciplines.
And on that note, we're going to leave it at that. Meteorologist and climatologist Lourdes Thiebig, one of the remarkable women we honor this month. We appreciate you being with us today. You take care.
And I appreciate your featuring me. Thank you, too. Take care. Thanks.
Thanks. Take care. See you again soon. We're going to take a break now. Still ahead, drama unfolds at the 94th Academy Awards ceremony. Stay tuned for that. Dateline Philippines will be right back. And let's go back to the campaign trail. Presidential bet is Scott Moreno wooing voters, this time in Misamis Oriental. Our very own George Carino now joins us with the latest. George, over to you.
Hi, JC. Good afternoon. Mayor Scott Moreno de Magoso was surprised at the large crowd that greeted him upon arrival in Misamis Oriental. From Butuan City, Mayor Scott and his party flew in by a helicopter to the city of Hingo, and he was met by supporters. And from Hingo, he moved by a motorcade towards the town, nearby town of Medina, where he was met by a crowd who waited at the covered court of the municipality of the town of Medina. And Mayor Isko said the crowd does not look like the 8% that Pulse Asia survey indicated last February. We have to remember that in the last presidential survey of Pulse Asia done between February 14 to 23, or February 18 to 23 rather, Mayor Isko received a dismal single-digit rating for Visayas and Mindanao at 8%. But Berisco said the crowd that welcomed him does not look like the 8% that Pulse Asia was talking about. But still, he doesn't want to comment or judge the survey if it's right or wrong, but he will take it as a guide to improve his rating as the campaign moves on towards May 9 elections. For today, Mayor Isko will move towards Cagayan de Oro, where he is scheduled to render a courtesy call to Mayor Oca Moreno and meet his supporters at the Divisoria area of Cagayan de Oro City. Easy.
Thanks a lot, George. Take care. Keep safe. George Carino there joining us on the line. Moving on, presidential candidate Ferdinand Marcos Jr. continues to campaign, this time in Mindanao. The late dictator's son is in North Cotabato, where he paid a courtesy call on Governor Nancy Catamco and other local executives. Over the weekend, Marcos visited General Santos in South Cotabato, where he talked about his post-pandemic plans. His running mate, Davao City Mayor Sara Duterte, was not there, but her brother, Davao Vice Mayor Sebastian Baste Duterte, was there in her stead. The younger Duterte expressed hope their father, President Rodrigo Duterte, will soon announce his support for Marcos.
Nakita natin ang PDP laban, nag-release na ng statement na they're supporting BBM. So I hope the President will express his support to BBM.
Meanwhile, a new alliance called the SARA One Super Coalition was officially launched Sunday. Their aim to continue the ongoing momentum of the UNI team, which has been dominating the recent pre-election surveys. The group claims to have 2 million members in and out of the country. Begins a phased lockdown to curb an Omicron-fueled outbreak. The snap lockdown splits the financial hub into two, with the eastern half closing from Monday until Friday to allow for COVID-19 testing, while the western side will be under lockdown beginning April 1st. Millions of residents and other COVID hotspots are also under citywide lockdowns. China reported 4,500 new COVID cases Sunday. Although the recent case numbers are low in a global context, they are China's highest since the first weeks of the pandemic in 2020. The Philippines' COVID death toll breaches 59,000 after 131 new fatalities were recorded Sunday. The health department also recorded 330 new infections, the second lowest daily tally so far this year. Active cases stand at 42,835. The Octo Research Group says case trends may continue to ease even into the next month.
We're expecting we'll be hovering between 400 and 500 on average over the next few weeks, unless something changes. There's a mutation of the Omicron virus in sub-variant BA2.2 that's spreading in some Asian countries. So this is what we're watching closely.
Another big-time oil price hike is set for tomorrow, Tuesday. Gasoline prices will jump by 3 pesos and 40 centavos. Diesel prices will go up by 8 pesos and 65, while a liter of kerosene will now cost 9 pesos and 40 centavos more. This will be the 12th oil price hike in the Philippines in the last 13 weeks. It comes after global crude prices spiked again last week due to the lingering conflict between Russia and Ukraine. With no end in sight for the war, the volatility in the crude markets is expected to continue. Qatar's agency made that energy minister also warning no country will be able to immediately replace Europe's Russian energy supply. The European Union aims to cut its dependency on Russian gas by two-thirds this year, following Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
So what we've committed as Qatar is that during this situation with Ukraine, we're not going to divert away from Europe, although we have the contractual right to do that. And I think even the Europeans and the discussion with the Americans on what they said they would do, it would take probably another 7 years to achieve that, or 5 to 7 years, I think, is what they talked about. It won't be something that's immediate. But immediately, I don't think we can help, and nobody can replace. I've said this very clearly. The volume that we're talking about, 30 to 40% of gas coming from Russia to Europe, is not something that can be replaced overnight.
The MRT3's free ride program begins today. The train line's management says they're ready to serve up to 400,000 passengers per day, more than double its current average ridership. Two more trains will also be dispatched to accommodate more commuters. COVID-19 protocols will also be strictly implemented.
Inexpect natin, medyo magkakatikit-tikit sila. Hindi naman natin magiging problema kasi marami na tayong available na train. Well prepared kami dyan, we will act accordingly and we'll try also to make sure na hindi naman masyadong maiipit yung mga tao sa loob ng train.
The free ride program, which aims to mark the rehabilitation of the MRT3, will run from today until April 30th. However, MRT3 operations will be suspended during the Holy Week. That's from April 12th to 17th for scheduled maintenance work. World News Now, tensions rise in Israel after two suspected Arab gunmen killed two people Sunday. The suspects were then shot dead by authorities. The attack took place as a two-day summit led by U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken convened. On Twitter, Blinken condemned the incident and sent his condolences to the families of the victims. The summit aims to reassure Israel and its Arab partners that the U.S. will continue to counter any Iranian threats. The Biden administration hopes to restore a 2015 nuclear deal with Iran. The deal had lifted sanctions on Tehran in exchange for limits on Iran's nuclear program. But former U.S. President Donald Trump pulled out of that agreement in 2017. Over in Afghanistan, female students and teachers demand that the Taliban reopen schools. More from this report.
Dozens of female students and teachers marched in front of the education ministry in Afghanistan's capital, Kabul, on Saturday. The women held signs that read, "Education is our right," against the Taliban's decision to shut girls' secondary schools just hours after reopening them earlier in the week. One student in the crowd, Fatima, expressed her sadness at the U-turn decision.
"Unfortunately, because of the Taliban, all our schools were closed. We girls are allowed to study same as boys. Islam has given us the right, but the Taliban has taken this right from us."
The Taliban's decision backtracked on their previous commitment to open high schools to girls. And after the decision, the United States abruptly cancelled meetings with the Taliban in Doha that were set to address key economic issues on Friday. Sources told Reuters that the talks were to include discussing hundreds of millions of dollars of funding currently held in a World Bank trust fund that is earmarked for Afghanistan's education sector. At the Doha Forum, activist and Nobel laureate Malala Yousafzai had this message for the Taliban.
"I would just say one thing to the Taliban, talabul ilmi farizatun ala kulli Muslim. Seeking education is a duty of every Muslim. I believe in peace talks, I believe in dialogue, but I also feel that at the same time, that they should not be recognized if they do not recognize the human rights of women and girls.
The U.S. Special Representative for Afghanistan said on Saturday he was hopeful that there would be a reversal of the Taliban's decision in coming days.
In business, U.S. President Joe Biden will propose a minimum tax on billionaires as part of the 2023 fiscal budget. Based on White House documents, Biden's billionaire minimum income tax would set a 20% minimum tax rate on households worth more than $100 million. It would target more than 700 billionaires in the U.S. The plan is also seen as a way of reducing the U.S. budget deficit by $360 billion in the next decade. Senate Democrats had proposed a billionaire's tax to help pay for Biden's social and climate change package known as the Build Back Better, but it did not move forward due to insufficient support in the upper chamber. A joke gone bad in this year's Academy Awards. In an apparently unscripted moment, Will Smith went on stage and hit Chris Rock in the face after the comedian made a joke about the actor's wife. Rock was presenting an award when he joked that Jada Pinkett Smith was in G.I. Jane 2, in seeming reference to her short hair. Pinkett Smith has alopecia, a condition that leads to hair loss. Upon returning to his seat, Smith yelled and cursed, saying the comedian should not speak about his wife. The heated exchange left both actors present in the event and viewers across the world speechless. Smith went on to win the Oscar for Best Actor. He used his acceptance speech to apologize for what happened. As for other big winners, heartwarming movie Coda bags the prestigious Best Picture Award. This marks the first time a streaming service took home the film industry's biggest prize. Jessica Chastain, meanwhile, was named Best Actress for her performance in The Eyes of Tammy Faye. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.